Thank you for being here. The use of a land acknowledgement is to honor and acknowledge my presence on the traditional lands of our First Nations peoples. I acknowledge that the city of Hamilton, where I record this podcast, is situated upon the traditional First Nations territories of the Erie, Huron-Wendat, Haudenosaunee, Mississaugas, and the Chonodon of the so-called Neutral Tribes. Hamilton is also directly adjacent to the Haldimand Treaty Territory. Welcome to the arena, where sometimes the hardest part is showing up. My name is Linda McLaughlin. Thank you for being here. Cynthia is one of the many friends I've made via Zoom over the course of the pandemic. We've been supporting each other through our respective writing projects. How does one make friends in a virtual world? How are we drawn to introduce ourselves to someone or push ourselves to learn something new? It's often a coincidental interaction or something that draws us into their story. You can ignore that impulse or let your curiosity and intuition lead you. Cynthia Miller is that kind of person. And she's someone who has a fascinating story. Thank you for listening. This is episode 42. I just wanted to reiterate how thrilled I am to have this conversation. We've gotten to know each other interacting via Zoom for months. You've been such an intriguing person and have referenced bits and pieces of your life in your writing, but also just in our conversations. Tucking into this book was a harrowing ride. It was so fascinating. At the same time, knowing that this is you was horrifying at times, absolutely horrifying and inspiring. And so hence my desire to speak to you in the context of my podcast. And I appreciate your time and your willingness to share your story. Obviously, you've written a book, so you've already shared your story. But perhaps to go a little deeper in some places, if that's at all possible, because you've really laid it all bare in your writing. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
So I've written up an introduction, which is thumbnail depth in terms of your story. Allow me to throw out this introduction, and then we'll get into the rest of the conversation. Dr. Cynthia Miller, you're a daughter. You're a designer, a visual artist, a whitewater guide, an adventurer, a healer, an author, and a PhD in cellular transformation and the psychology of change. You are the daughter of one of the scientists who was responsible for creating the bombs Fat Man and Little Boy, dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, respectively. Your childhood is filled with memories of your father's obsession with the hydrogen bomb. According to the records, he personally witnessed at least 131 tests. He brought home the fallout to you. In 1995, you were diagnosed with weapons-grade plutonium poisoning. Your childhood was defined by secrets, the overpowering presence of death, your mother's alcoholism, and the physical and psychological pain of growing up in that household. Your father's work took you to Iran, India, Switzerland for school, and California, among others. Those experiences shaped you. You had an intense awareness of other realms, of a spiritual world that you interacted with. You set out to free yourself from the daily physical and metaphysical pain and to help others. This is only scratching the surface of your remarkable journey. Welcome to the arena, Cynthia.
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm just thrilled to be here with you today.
Oh, you're welcome. I don't even know where to begin. Whitewater rafter, clothing designer, visual artist, healer, and a PhD, and someone who lost everything at one point, and you lost your inheritance. There's so many things that happened in your life that brought you so close to death. The physical pain that you were in for so much of your life, and I'm sure it continues now, because of the plutonium poisoning that is in your body. You're carrying this legacy in your DNA, in your cells, and you have gone through this powerful process of healing yourself, forgiving, releasing the souls of the Japanese people who were murdered on those days. Your book is phenomenal, the title of which I should share with the listeners is Unseen Connections from Pain and Violence to Joy. Where do you want to start?
Wow, great question. I've been thinking about this podcast for a few days, and the theme seemed to be courage. And mm-hmm. so I've been thinking about courage in my life. And when I was a whitewater river guide, it took great courage to face the rapids every day. But what I realized was I was actually seeing the fear in front of me. I could see the rapids. And that was profound, because before, everything was hidden. All the fear was underneath the surface in my life. And so being out in the wilderness and facing the fear every day, every rapid, it was a profound step in my journey of seeing it. And then once I could see it, then I could deal with it. Then later, when the fear inside was what I was facing on a daily basis, I had that experience from being in the wilderness. I felt like it was my training wheels to help me when I was really diving into the horrible stuff that was coming up from my depths.
Take me back to dinner conversation when you were growing up. What was that like?
The dinner I remember the most is when my dad had been gone for 13 months and he came home. He had just built and watched the first hydrogen bombs explode. And I was really intuitive as a kid. I could see this bomb exploding. I'm eating my frozen peas and minute mashed potatoes and I'm watching this bomb. And so I couldn't figure out how to get the radiation out of the water and out of the leaves. And, you know, I was 5 years old, and very innocently I asked my dad, who's going to clean up the mess? How does this work? He got really angry and sent me to my room. And it was the only time I was ever sent to my room. I remember I was hugging myself in the corner, just afraid. And the first thought was, I'm a girl, so I can't really know anything. And then the next thought was, I wanted to know why people wanted to kill each other. What was it that made people hate each other so much that they would bomb each other? It didn't make sense to my little five-year-old brain at all. So that was the most important. But throughout my childhood, dinner was never about my sister or I. It was always about Dad's work. When he was home, he wasn't home a lot, and it was always this top secret, like he was up on a pedestal and we were these little peons underneath helping keep everything going. It was a weird childhood.
And your mother was completely disconnected. Through alcohol, she numbed whatever she was going through, but seemed to have not really been that interested in being a mother.
No, she wasn't. Yeah, every morning starting when I was four, I started school. And so I would get up and take her coffee in bed. And then I would make my breakfast and make my lunch and go to school on my own. And I didn't know how to tell time. And so sometimes I get there really early and there'd just be the janitor there. I'd sit on the steps of the school waiting for school to open. But she wasn't present. And I would ask her questions, and her response to everything was, just don't think about it. Just don't think about it. So that was her mantra of dealing with what was going on.
What event in your life has had the most profound impact on you?
I'd have to say the spontaneous Kundalini awakening.
Explain for the listeners what that is.
Yes. I had a near-death experience, and a couple days later, I was sitting on the couch kind of recovering, and I looked down on my arm, and I could see the cells inside my arm, and from one breath to the next, this bolt of energy shot up my body and out the top of my head. And in that one split second, my entire reality changed. I looked up and I could see inside my husband's body. I looked out the window and all the trees had auras and like almost rainbows around them. And when I walked out on the street, I could see inside everybody's body. And I assumed that this would go away. And I just assumed this would leave, but that was 1973, and I still see dimensions. So it radically changed my life. Now I would say my whole brain was completely rewired in one moment of this profound energy that erupted from my lower, from the Kundalini is down in the base of the spine, and that flew up my body. I didn't know what it was for about the first 4 years. And a friend said, every time I read this book, I think of you. So I got the book and it was called Kundalini. And I went, I had no idea what that was. And then I read, it was by a man named Gopi Krishna. And everything he was writing about, I had experienced. And so I went, oh, that's what this is. But luckily from my childhood, from living in a top secret home, I knew to keep quiet. That's the one thing I knew, was just be quiet and just go through this. Years later, I met a woman who had a similar experience, and she told her children about what she was experiencing, and they had her locked up in a mental institution. She was put on drugs, electroshock, and they thought she was just nuts. Because back then, these experiences weren't as well known in the West as they are now.
What does living a courageous life mean to you?
To me, living a courageous life is being true to who you are. It's living your own essence, your own self. What I see from most people, or a lot of people, is we're all trying to cram ourselves into this little prescribed box of how we're supposed to be. So after I got my PhD, I became a psychotherapist, and working with clients, every single one of them at one point would tell me something they had never told anyone else. It was of a multidimensional or of an uncommon experience that they were afraid to share because they were afraid of being ostracized or made wrong. And what I kept seeing was we all have these weird things happening in ourselves, but everybody's afraid to talk about them or afraid to really embrace who we are.
Mm-hmm. I liken it to listening to an intuition, listening to yourself, that inner knowing in the vernacular. And when you have that, it's not in the physical realm. It's not in the physical world. We're so attached to this 3D experience. We don't really understand. When you think about it, it's like, what is electricity? We can't touch it, but we accept it. And there's this idea that an interaction with a higher knowing, a higher knowledge, a higher experience is somehow not acceptable.
Ever since my Kundalini awakening, I believe we all live on multiple dimensions. And it's just not something that's currently accepted. And I think over time it might be. But we have these experiences that don't fit the linear 3D model of what life is, what it is to be a human. And we all have these connections to this greater expanded part of who we are that's connected to the cosmos, the realms. When I studied quantum physics, that was very helpful because a lot of those terminologies I could use in what I was seeing, and I didn't sound so airy-fairy when I talked about physics rather than just talking about energy or vibrations or things like that. But I think we're amazing people, and we just need permission to be who we are. And I think as we all tune into our inner knowing, that's what the world is needing, rather than this mental construct. When we look at our bodies, our left brain is such a small part of our entire body. And we receive information through our entire body, not just a little bit of the left brain. And as we give ourselves permission and kind of evolve into allowing ourselves to be fully here, then we create a world that's different from what's happening out there in the world right now. So if you're saying trusting our guts have amazing information for us to follow. And a lot of times that information is very different from what the programming in our mind tells us of what reality is.
If you are able to tap into that intuition, that higher realm, I think about my use and others' use of alcohol or drugs to numb us, to push aside that ability to sense what's happening. And as you say, to be able to understand or to connect with what is happening around us. Is it a fear of actually connecting with that higher knowledge? Is that it would just be such an assault as opposed to it being relieving or welcoming?
We have been trained to not think about it. And that training goes way back into our neural programs and our DNA. Most stories or heroes' journeys or fairy tales, we always come up against this fear. And then if you go through the fear, there's a gift. And so part of the process, I think, of being courageous is having the courage to face the fear and see what's underneath and behind it. And once we get through that darkness, then we burst into another realm or another awakening, and we see things in a whole new perspective. Mm-hmm. There's this awakening happening on the planet right now, and there's also this major clamping down. So there's these two different worlds that are bubbling up. One is that we really need to follow the rules and be in fear. And the other is that we get to open up to our inner knowing. And as we explore our inner knowing, I think we can solve a lot of the problems of the world from this expanded state.
This is truly a time in history when there is a global connection, where we are simultaneously facing death, facing potential annihilation, had this pandemic not been come to grips with through the vaccinations, whether you're a believer in the vaccination or not. And now the climate crisis is coming to the fore. I have to think that these are tests, that these are moments when we need to really look deeply at ourselves and say, we can't come at this necessarily in the same way that we always have. And how will this change us? Will it change us going forward?
Yeah, I think we need to change. And when the bombs happened, I assumed as a little kid that something would change. And then we had Chernobyl and Fukushima, and both times I assumed people would wake up to what we were doing to the environment. Plutonium has a half-life of 24,000 years. This is not something that's going away overnight. Then when the pandemic hit, it's like for the first time globally, we were all connected and all really impacted. And when it first hit, I was knocked out for days. I was on the internet trying to figure out what was going on. And then it just felt like waves of fear kept washing over me. And I was on the couch. I just couldn't even move. The fear was so intense. And so I thought, I don't want to be connected to this consciousness. And I realized that the collective unconscious was filled with so much fear that I decided to disconnect from the collective unconscious. It felt absolutely forbidden, like I wasn't allowed to do that. But I wanted to, so I did. And as I disconnected from that global fear, I could see what was going on in my own body. And through that, come up with a whole new model for reality, for what's going on here. Because fear shuts down the higher brain functionings. It keeps you in your ancient reptilian brain, which is about 500 million years old, and the neocortex doesn't function when you're in fear. So you can't come up with new solutions when your brain is triggered. So right now, I think it's very important for people to do whatever they need to do to get beyond this fear that's like a blanket around the earth and see this time as an amazing time of transformation. From what I know, it's the first time in recorded human history where we have the ability to change our consciousness, to shift our neural programs, to actually change how our DNA is functioning, which is profound. So we have this ability to evolve into a higher humanity, or we can kill ourselves off. It's quite a time we're living in.
I feel in reading the book that when you met the survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that there was a major shift that happened.
Yeah. I met a man here in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, and he invited me to New York City to meet with the survivors and to go to high schools throughout New York City and give talks. And that sounded like a great idea until it came down to the wire and I was getting ready to go. And I was absolutely terrified. And then when I arrived in New York and I met the survivors, I was really scared. And one of them came up to me and she gave me a big hug. I'm getting teary-eyed. And she welcomed me. And it was profound. I had no idea that could happen. And then the next day we were on stage, and I knew none of these survivors' stories. And they would get up on stage in front of hundreds of high school students and tell these gripping stories. And then 2 minutes later, I'm up on stage and I would say, my father built that bomb. And the students' eyes bugged out and they sat up in their chairs like they just couldn't relate to it. So I did this 2 years in a row. And the second year, we were all out to dinner and just like family. And the same woman brought me a kimono the second year and said, "Welcome to the family." And I'm wearing her kimono, my kimono, and it's just amazing. So we were out at dinner in this restaurant in New York City, and we're all like this family, all the Japanese, all the interpreters. And there was also President Truman's grandson was with us. And we're all having dinner, and we're having bites of different people's food and sharing desserts and just laughing and having the greatest time. And we get ready to leave, and the owner of the restaurant walks up to me and she says, "Now, I know Clifton Truman Daniels is President Truman's grandson, and I know all the Japanese and the interpreters. Who are you?" And I said, "My father built the bomb." And her face just dropped, because she had seen how we were interacting. The last day on stage, Clifton was there, and this woman, Shigeko, and myself. And it felt like energetically there was this completion or this circle of energy was going around the world of some kind of healing. So it was quite a profound experience.
And we could spend all day sharing stories like that, where your ability to feel, hear, sense the meaning in what you chose to experience, in what was thrust upon you, what you were born into, is so important and beautiful. Thank you for sharing that story.
Thank you.
What's your legacy?
What's my legacy? I guess I would say my legacy is that I have come through a lot. I might be one of the first people born on Earth with plutonium radiation poisoning from my father. And so I've always been at the forefront of this new wave. And I think this new wave is about stepping into this amazing multiple dimensional beings that we are, that we have a gift or a possibility to consciously evolve, which wasn't available even 30, 40 years ago. But it's here now. And I would love for my legacy to be leaving tools for people to take on their own conscious evolution. Because as each one of us changes inside, that ripples out into the world. And we can make a huge difference if we try, if we choose. And to me, it comes from changing inside. As we release our fears and as we step into more of who we really are and gather together, we can create an entirely new reality. And the question is, are there enough of us?
It's an excellent question.
So at times I give up hope, and then it's like, no, I'm not giving up hope. Not at this point in my life. I am going forward. I am choosing every day to create this new reality.
What would you do on your last day?
Wow. Probably what I do almost every day, enjoy life to the fullest of my ability in that day.
If you had 5 minutes to have a conversation with someone, living or dead, who would that be?
I heard you ask this on a previous tape, and I've been thinking about it, and I have absolutely no idea. I've been thinking for days of who would I do? I have no idea.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up?
I would love to encourage everyone to be courageous and follow their inner knowing. Follow that deep little voice inside to be who they are. It took me years to speak up. It took me years to write my book. I was 74 when it was finally published. I'm just now learning how to speak up. So I encourage people to speak up and say their truth. The world needs to hear what each person has to say, what each person's inner knowing, how that wants to express in the world. And as that happens, we can create a whole new reality for the highest and best of all.
Tell me about the next book that you're writing. You've written more than, what was your first book that you wrote?
My first book was The Art of Radical Gratitude. The quick story behind that is I'd lost all my money. Almost everything I owned was stolen. I was in massive pain and I was ready to commit suicide. And the day I wanted to kill myself, I was getting everything prepared. And this voice from my guts shot up and said, choose gratitude. And I thought, what do I have to be grateful for?
And you weren't 22. You were in your 50s or 60s when this happened?
I was 60.
Yes.
I was 60. So, and I'd sold my house. I had nothing. I'm living in a tent in the wilderness. And I was in a place where I knew no one. I had no kind of support system. I was just out there. You know, and I'd been rummaging around in the back of grocery stores hunting for food. And I was way in the bottom dregs of life. So my mind's going, choose gratitude. But then after wrestling around, I thought, okay, I'll choose it. If it doesn't work, I can always kill myself later. So I chose gratitude and it was profound. I was choosing gratitude for having everything stolen, being grateful for being in pain. And as I kept going in deeper, because I could see what was happening in my own body. So I would watch the gratitude spiraling through my body and shifting the pain. And then I had some neighbors. At this point, I was living in a house. And I had some neighbors, and I would go down the street and watch some fire spinning at night, and I took photos. And every time I would go down there, I would take photos of how the gratitude was spiraling through my body. And so then I decided to make a book with these photos of how gratitude works with the words. And so that was my first book, The Art of Radical Gratitude.
And now you're working on essentially a companion to what you've already written. Is that right?
Yeah. So my next book, I'm still not positive about the title. Today is The Inner Revolution, which is R in parentheses, evolution, conscious transformation. So it's a book about how to awaken on all the first 12 dimensions. And this book is a sequel to my memoir. When I was writing my memoir, I wanted to rewrite the story of my life. I wanted a new perspective because I wanted to see it from a positive viewpoint rather than from all the death and destruction. I wanted to see it in a whole new way. And as I was writing the book, that came out. And so what came forward was what I call conscious multidimensional evolution, CM squared equals E. So this next book is how to change your neural programs, how to change your DNA, how to consciously shift all that negativity and fear and all that dark stuff that lives in our bodies so that we can expand into our higher selves, into our brilliance. So that's what the book is about. I'm really excited.
You have this impish grin on your face, and I know how much you're wrestling this beast of a book, and it's so incredible to watch it unfold, and I can't wait to read it.
I'd love to hear more about your journey, but I don't know if that's appropriate for this podcast.
What aspect are you curious about?
The point of change for you. From what I know from reading, you hit some moment where things had to shift.
Well, there were three deaths. First was my father. He died suddenly of a heart attack in 2017, and I wasn't close to him. And that really opened up more of a chasm than I first thought would happen. The second death was a friend of my partner's. She died of cancer. It really went through her very quickly. And her sister and her both were trying to wring life out of the remaining days that she had. She was not much older than me at the time. And I looked at that and thought, that could be me. Mm. And so what am I waiting for? That was the one that really, for me, was I'm going to make myself sick. I was terribly overweight and drinking too much and under a lot of stress. I just thought, I've got to do something. And so the magic of Facebook, an ad popped up in my Facebook feed, and it was for a yoga and meditation retreat. I'd always wanted to do a retreat. And so I just told my partner and I said, I'm going to go. I went with a question in my heart, which was, what am I going to do? And within the first day, I knew that I had to leave the business that I was in. And if I was being honest with myself at that time, I knew that the relationship that I was in was going to have to go next. I came back from the retreat. I talked to my business partners and said, I can't do this anymore. And they were amazing. And so I wrapped things up with the business. I knew that my relationship was pretty much over. And so I left him, left the town that I lived in. Took me 6 months or so before I came around to addressing the booze. I started to lose weight and work on that. And then I changed careers. So those were a lot of external pieces, of course. Those are all very visible, but you don't go through that without completely changing from the inside as well. I continue with a meditation practice and continue to ask the questions of who am I? What's it for? What's it about? There's always more layers or dimensions to go through in that exploration. And I feel like that is now the process that will go through for the rest of my life. I'm deeply moved by this conversation and believe wholeheartedly in what you speak about. It's impossible to understand it using your left brain. But it is absolutely possible to understand it when you have allowed yourself to go through change, as I have, as anyone who has reached for that belief that there has to be more than what I can see in front of me, and that there has to be more possibility. And the more you reach into that possibility, the more that what you speak about becomes crystal clear.
Hmm. Thank you. I love hearing that. Thank you.
It's been truly an honor to have this conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to me.
Oh, it's been an honor for me. I just feel so blessed to know you and to be here with you today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. What I've learned in listening to the many guests on this podcast is that they hear and listen to that inner voice, that inner ally that is confident in their ability to accomplish their goal and to overcome the difficulties they face. What are you hearing when you listen closely? What are you waiting to act upon? Thank you for listening. I will share links to Cynthia's work in the show notes, as well as a transcription. In the meantime, please follow or subscribe to this podcast, and if someone else might benefit from listening to this episode, share it. Leave a rating or review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to support my efforts in creating this podcast, become a member of The Arena. Go to my website, thearena-podcast.com, and click on the support button to find out more. It's so amazing to have listeners like all of you. I look forward to sharing my next guest story. He served in the Canadian military and then became a patrolman in the City of Saskatoon Police Force. Since retirement, he's found a new career as a public speaker and writer with 3 books already under his belt. I look forward to sharing this special Remembrance Day episode with you. Until next time, my name is Linda McLaughlin in The Arena.